Welcome to 21 Grams Speaks, the podcast where I, Dennis, the creator of 21 Grams, chat with my talented friends about a wide range of topics from mental health, addiction, and recovery to religion and politics. We dive into honest conversations to broaden our perspectives and share them with you. Thank you for joining us as we explore the complexities of these subjects, bringing you thought-provoking insights. I'm Dennis, your host, and this is 21 Grams Speaks. Hey, what's up, guys? This is Dennis with 21 Grams Speaks. I'm super excited for our guest today and the conversation to come. This is my friend Garrett, who was introduced to me through one of my best friends in the whole world, and that's Ethan Carter, my favorite leather crafter. And the whole Maker Camp community, I reached out to them a while ago when I was invited to, you know, participate in the camp there. And as the listeners understand and know, sobriety is the most important thing in my life, more than my friends, more than my family. And so I reached out to them and was like, hey, is there any kind of like any tools? Is there anything that could help me, you know, stay sober at this event? I'm a little bit nervous. And they put me in contact with my my new sober friend, Garrett. So we've been talking back and forth, kind of sharing some inspiration and kind of hyping each other up before we go to this event. And so I just asked him to come on the podcast so we could talk about sobriety, drug use, our history, and maybe how we might be able to help other people. I mean, that's what this podcast is about. So Garrett, do you mind introducing yourself? That was quite the intro, probably the longest intro, but gives a good background of where we're at going into this conversation.
No, I'm good with it, man. No, my name is Garrett Sullivan. I am from a little town, not little, Chattanooga, Tennessee, down south. I've been sober for 8 years, almost 8 years. October 27th is my sober birthday. That's where my whole woodworking business came from. You can find me on Instagram at CW_woodworking. And I had to have something to keep my hands busy. I made a board for a buddy, and here we are 7 years later.
Yeah.
In a thriving business. So yeah, it's great to be on. I love the fact that we connected. I always like meeting sober friends, especially ones that are coming into situations where they're like, what do I do?
Yeah. Yeah. It makes awesome. Well, first and foremost, congratulations on 8 years. I can't wait to get to that point. I think that that's something to be super proud of, because it's fucking hard, man. It's hard every day. Yeah. It's hard. So if you can make it one more day, that's always good, man. And when you could put, you know, string 8 years together, that is awesome. And, in the same way as you, I was just talking to my wife before I jumped on here about the reason why I stay so busy is because when I get bored, I get thirsty. And when I get thirsty, I get blacked out drunk and end up in Mexico or something. There's no like the way it happens is so quickly. So I'd rather be overworked and sober than drunk and not working. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's one thing, you know, I started my first year of sobriety, I was just always on the go, because you're right. If once you stop drinking, you start to figure out why you were drinking.
And that's scary.
And that's terrifying, right? Because you have to deal, you know, people are like, getting sober is the hardest thing in the world. Getting sober is not the hardest part of it. Staying sober and mentally okay and not unaliving yourself is the hardest part of it.
Oh, right? For sure.
So we, you know, when I got sober, I didn't really have a choice. I was a lucky case. I didn't actually hit rock bottom, but I was really damn close.
Mm-hmm.
Two of my bosses at my day job pulled me aside one early morning and said, listen, you either get sober or you're fired.
Right.
Now, these two bosses of mine were also two of my best friends. They were groomsmen in my wedding.
Okay.
And I got married after the fact, but I've been friends with them at that point for, you know, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And And my boss told me, his name was Rob. He told me, he goes, if I allow you to stay working here and I let you keep drinking, then all I am is an enabler. And that's right, right? Because so I went home, and I just said, all right, that's it, I'm done. My wife was very getting fed up with my drinking also. She was my girlfriend at the time. We had not been together long, and she was about this close to leaving. And so she stuck by me. We actually just celebrated our 7-year anniversary this past weekend.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. But that first week was horrible. It was like I had the flu, because
Oh, yeah.
I had been up to, I could finish a handle of Jack in 2 days,
Yeah.
and
You're about where I was.
without question, without even thinking about it. So yeah, being sober is hard your first year. We didn't leave the house barely at all.
Yeah.
I wasn't at the spot that I could really do a lot of woodworking. I hadn't gotten into that yet. I had
Yeah.
dabbled as a kid and stuff, but we didn't leave the house much. We watched a lot of movies. We would have to figure stuff out to kind of keep my head busy.
Yeah, it's all I agree with you there for sure.
Right? Because,
Yeah.
I mean, that old saying, idle hands are the devil's workshop kind of thing. I used to laugh. I was like, whatever. It's true.
Oh yeah.
Like, super true. So I was like you. Like you just said a minute ago, you'd get thirsty. I was thirsty all the time. So I went through coconut water, Gatorade, because water just didn't do it. Water bored me.
Yeah.
Right. And so we had to do that. And I almost slipped about 8 months into it. I almost slipped. I got real, real sick.
Yeah.
Just a cold. Well, I wasn't even thinking about it, because it had been past 6 months. I was feeling pretty good. And I just had some Robitussin. Right?
Yeah, I know where you're going with this.
Didn't think about it, just took the lid off, and used to, I just take a swig and keep
Yeah.
going instead of using a spoon. And I took a swig and I was like, hello.
I miss you.
Hello, friend.
Yeah.
And I dumped the whole bottle into the sink right then. Called my wife and told her what happened, and she was like, I'm on the way. And she came over and hung out, and we were cool, but it's so quick that you can stumble.
As soon
Right.
as you as soon as you think that you got things kind of under control and you feel a little bit more than confident and you start creeping into the like cocky area, man, you get humbled real quick. And there's been multiple times where that's, I mean, we were just having this conversation. Today is actually my birthday, and we had
Happy
a,
birthday.
thank you very much, the big 4-0.
Nice.
I'm gonna stay 40 for the rest of my life. So next year,
Okay.
40th birthday, next year. So, but we had a little get together with her family and my family and a couple friends and stuff like that. And a few of the cousins who I used to drink with. I mean, that's what happens at parties, right? Like it's pretty standard. And they don't have the problem that I do, but they had come over and it got brought up or whatever. And one of the cousins asked my wife, like, hey, is it cool? And she's like, no, it's fine. Like, you don't have the problem, do you? No, he does. So why should you have to like, and what I was explaining to her is that it's not in those situations that I'm triggered. It's when I'm alone and when I'm bored that are when I feel like I could quote unquote get away with it, I feel like, oh, well, I could just do it this one time. I'll bounce back, like all of these different things. And then I realize, oh, I'm not doing it for other people. I'm doing it for myself. So I wouldn't get away with it. This is for me. You know what I mean? But I think so much about like the platform that I have and these conversations that I have and the people that will reach out to me in like DMs that are like, oh, I heard the podcast, or oh, I saw this thing that you did and you were talking about sobriety. That was a huge, kind of, it influenced me in a positive way, or like the mental health stuff and stuff like that. And I'm like, that's what helps me stay sober when it's hard. But when I have like downtime, man, that's the hardest. And I'd rather be a workaholic and sober. 100%. Plus, I love what I do, so it's easy, you know.
It helps,
It
right?
helps, yeah.
Finding something you like is easy. It is true. You find something you love, you don't work a day in your life. I get that. It's still work though, right?
Yeah.
But one of the things my wife and I did, we had to come up with situational awareness,
Yeah.
right? I deal with anxiety. I deal with
Same.
anxiety that comes out that I that portrays as aggression. When I get
Okay.
overly anxious, I get angry. Like,
Yeah.
and so it comes in waves. It's not all the time. It just hits randomly. And I've learned more and more as I've gotten older. I am no longer 40. I passed that about 4 years ago.
Okay.
And that's when all this gray in my beard,
I
I've
can't
got,
wait. I want it
it's,
so bad.
yeah, I hate the fact I'm 6'4". I weigh like 200 pounds. So I'm quite a slim feller. I
Yeah.
wanted to be Santa Claus so bad, but that's neither here nor there. But we had to come up with situational awareness for when we got outside of the house, because one thing nobody teaches you in sobriety, nobody, is how many friends you will lose.
Yeah, that's
Right?
so true. And it's so,
Nobody ever talks about that, because what you realize very quickly, and it's hard. I went through massive depression over it, because I worked in the bar business for over a decade, right? I was very social. I'm still very social. My wife told me the other day, we were up in Chicago, she was like, "You've got to not be so nice to people. Like, they don't understand you." Because I'll be your best friend. I met you 5 minutes ago. I don't care.
Yeah, I'm this dude. Not to cut you off because it's so important. I just want to say that we live a completely parallel life, just a few years apart. No joke. Like from how you got sober, how you were with your girlfriend for a short amount of time, how you ended up marrying her, how dude, I'll spark up a conversation with the clerk at the meat counter for 30 minutes, and my wife will be like, dude, we're shopping. Like, let's go. You know what I
Right.
mean? Like, it doesn't matter who it is. I'll find common ground with anyone. But
Yeah.
carry on. I'm sorry. I just,
No,
it
you're
feels like
right,
I'm
because
talking to myself 4 years, 5 years down the road.
goals for you, buddy.
Yeah.
You're gonna do it.
Yeah.
And 4 years from now, we'll have the same conversations.
That's right. That's right.
My wife would get on to me. I'll be like, "I was talking to Paul, and he said blah blah." She's like, "Who's Paul?" And I'm like, "He's the guy that opened the door for us."
Right.
She's like, "What? Huh?" Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
But we stayed in the house for about the first year or so, and then we finally started going out. But I stopped hanging out with a lot of people, and you realize very quickly that those friends you thought you had were drinking buddies,
Yeah.
and that's it.
And I think when you can start getting out of the depression phase is when you see that that's okay. That's also okay. It's okay to have had that. That's something, it's so funny. Again, something I'm working through. Like I said, I just had this party the other day, and I'm very much a social person, less now that I'm sober, just because that was lubricant for conversation. But as I've gotten older, and these kind of events where I invite people, and less and less and less and less people show up, it makes me sad, man. Like, I'm like, dude, I thought, and we're planning a wedding, and it's like you go through the people that you want to invite, and you're like, man, I thought my whole life that I'd have this person at my wedding, and now I haven't talked to him in 5 or 10 years. Like, it's expensive to have a wedding. Like, am I going to really pay for, $150, $200 for this person and their spouse that I've never met? Like, maybe not. I'll save that seat for someone else.
We did that. We had beer and wine at our wedding. That was it, just
Yeah.
because we knew. But I the friendships I have now, that it's maybe a handful, right? That's it.
Yeah.
But we talk about some deep stuff, like the real things, like
Yeah.
what's bothering you, how are you mentally,
The stuff that you try to avoid when you're in active addiction, you're trying not to feel, you're trying
that you've
not to
masked
think.
it all. Yeah, you don't want to handle it.
Now you realize how beautiful life can actually be, and being okay with being in touch with your emotions and being emotionally mature. There's something really beautiful about that. And if you can share that with a friend, you create deeper bonds. It means more and it feels less shallow, I feel.
Right. You know, one thing my wife and I did, you know, we've got Michaela. Michaela is now, they are now 21. But then they were 15 when we first started.
Are those your
hanging out
children?
Yes, technically.
Okay.
No, but yes.
Okay.
They are my kids, hands
right.
down. I love them more than anything in this world. My son actually legally changed his last name to mine a couple of years ago, which
I can't think of a more compliment that someone could give another person than to take their last name. That says a lot
huge.
About you.
Oh yeah. But my stinky is what we call them, and they are about 5 feet tall and just a little spitfire.
Yeah.
But we would use them as a get out of jail free card. If we were out somewhere and I started getting antsy, right? That was my thing. I'd get overwhelmed and I'd get antsy. And I'd look at my wife and say, doesn't Michaela have something to do tomorrow?
Code word.
And she'd be like, oh, yeah, totally forgot. We got to get out of here. All right, cool. And we'd split. You know, the old Irish goodbye without the drinking.
Yeah. It's that me and my wife have something similar to that where she makes it very, very clear that if I start feeling that anxiety that comes along with being around booze, because you can't avoid it your whole life. Like I
right.
mentioned before, it's not other, I mean, other people may have problems with drinking that you're around, but that's not my job to like, to do an intervention on someone I don't know or whatever it is. So
nope.
I'll just be like, hey, you know what? I go to bed super early like you do. And I'm like, hey, I'm getting tired. Can we get going? She's like, absolutely. She'll drop anything. Sure. Or if it's like a family thing, we'll take two cars and that's totally fine. Hey, I got to go check on the dog. Okay. It's kind of a no brainer. And it's things like that, having a partner that helps so much in sobriety, which leads me to something I want to ask you and kind of a compare and contrast is, what are some of the tools that you used early in your sobriety compared to, and including that you still use today? And by tools, I'm assuming you know what I'm talking about. What you just explained is a tool where you're like, hey,
yeah,
doesn't
yeah,
don't
yeah,
they
yeah.
have school tomorrow or something to do tomorrow?
Absolutely. One of the tools I used early on is honesty with myself.
God, yes. Yes.
That's the biggest one. You have to realize, hey, I am out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm out of control, but I can't control my situation. I can control how I react to it.
Yeah.
And that honesty gave me another level of sanity, if you will, because I didn't feel horrible in the fact that I didn't have to stay in that situation, right?
Yeah.
And then honesty with my spouse. My spouse is my biggest tool,
yeah.
Right? She is hands down the best part about me. Bliss, I don't know if you've met Bliss before. Bliss made furniture.
I don't think so. No.
If you're coming up to Maker Camp, you'll meet him. The dude's got I'll send you a clip. He's got the best laugh you've ever heard in your life.
Awesome. I can't wait to meet everyone.
Dude, it's amazing. It's such a great time. And we need to get into that soon, because that's going to be the perfect conversation for stuff.
Yeah.
But Bliss messaged me. He was like, dude, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but your wife's hot. I was like, you're absolutely right. I outkicked my coverage. And I told my wife, she goes, I have no problem with your friends telling me I'm attractive. She was like, because they're your friends telling you. They're not, you know. But Bliss is like, God bless women that love big bearded men.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bliss and I have become very good friends. We talk about stuff. I didn't know Bliss until last year. Until I sat down with him at a bar, funny enough.
Yeah.
And we just like we knew each other the whole time.
That's similar to how I feel this conversation is. And just so the audience knows, this is the first time physically seeing you, first time
Right.
talking like this. There's been a few messages, through Instagram or whatever, but
Right.
there's something special that happens when you have it. It's rather
When you
than
have
being a
that bond.
drinking, yeah, rather than being a drinking buddy, you have a sober buddy where it's like you have an insight into someone else's life because they've gone through similar, if not the same, struggles as you have.
You know, the best way I had, I never had a sponsor in AA. AA was weird for me. I went to AA for about a year and then I didn't go to
Yeah.
AA.
I never went. I
It just
never
wasn't
went.
my thing,
Yeah.
right? I went because I wanted to do to see if I could instill that discipline of doing it every day. And I did it 5 days a week every day. And then I just didn't. But where was I going with that? Sometimes I tend to space.
You were talking about bliss, and then I interrupted you. You were
And
sitting at
then
a
we were
bar.
talking about, but I was talking with, one of the guys that helped me out a lot was he wasn't a sponsor necessarily. He was a friend that I had been, he had gone through AA once, failed miserably at staying sober, lost his, he was a medical professional, lost his medical license, and then went back through and he's, I think almost 15 years sober now and he's, doing medicine again. But he helped me out a lot because I could call him. But you were talking about a sober buddy. The best way he described it was like going through a war together.
Yeah, definitely.
You can if you talk to see some meet somebody and they figure out they served in the same area, they're best friends all of a sudden. Because you have somebody that knows what you've been through. Not exactly. Our stories are different, how we got there, but a lot of what we feel, a lot of how we think now, because you have to be on the defensive, not defensive like guarding against people, but you have to be aware of your surroundings a lot more.
All the time. Like even that's something that there's a few things that were big milestones for me. Going to the first wedding after I had gotten sober. Wedding typically is a place where, I mean, I can't think of a single wedding that I ever went to that I didn't get hammered at up until that first one that I went to when I was sober. Flying, I would always make sure that I was extra tuned up if I was going to fly. Going on vacation, there's certain milestones of going through things that if you're able to accomplish those things, and get through them, man, it the after feeling after that, it feels so good. Me and my wife, and this probably, makes us sound a lot older than we are, but our vacation style of choice is to go cruising. Like we like to go on cruise ships and it's easy. Everything is provided for you. It's there. And that's a place where I would drink a lot. And I was really nervous going into the first time after I'd gotten sober and I had a long talk with her. I'm like, maybe this is an opportunity to see if I'm able to, have a couple drinks and be responsible with it. Like that thought starts creeping into your head at some point.
How'd that go for you?
Oh, the conversation ended it immediately. My wife told me like, okay, like I can't stop you. And then through the conversation, she had mentioned like, to be honest with you, it gives me a lot of anxiety. That's 7 days on a boat with you, and I know how you are. She's like, and she was just honest with me, and immediately I was like, well, no, like it's a no-brainer. Of course, I'm not going to drink because if like I've fucked up so many vacations because of my selfishness in drinking, and I'm like, this is the first time we're going to go back with me being sober. Like I don't want her to feel any kind of like feeling. And I had another friend who like a buddy that I tattooed with a number of years who was kind of a mentor when I was tattooing, and I had the same conversation with him. He's like, well, just so you know, you put in 2 years and as soon as you have one drink of anything, you're starting from day one. And he's like, the 7 days that you might have a couple drinks, it's going to take you 7 months to forgive yourself, the guilt that you're going to put yourself through. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you have to know that before you go in. And he knows me. I'm a big, like, softy, you know what I mean? He knows I'm going to beat myself up and I'm going to feel like I let every single person that ever listened to a podcast that I did down, like all of those things. So once I got back to land after that, I was truly proud of myself, and that's okay.
You should
to
be.
Yeah, I was like,
that's the one thing I get on to people about that are sober. They don't give themselves credit for little things, and you should, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I went the first time I went camping without drinking. That's amazing, you know, stuff like that. My wife. Now, does your spouse still drink?
Very, very, very rarely, and less less because of it. I'll give you a little bit of a longer answer for a short question. So when we first started dating, we both drank a lot, and I think it was because you're getting to know someone. There's, you know, the nervous butterflies, and it helps. And then progressively, she started drinking less, and I started drinking more. Then it became a problem, just like you. It was like, you know, a hair away from leaving me in our relationship, and it was just a bad time. And then after I had gotten sober, she would still periodically drink, but she would make sure it was okay with her. Drinking never bothered me. Like, she doesn't have a problem. I don't like the thing that she drinks, like one particular wine, but then she'll go 8 months without even drinking at all. Then we go on a cruise and she has 2 glasses of wine in 7 days. Or if give you an example. So again, we just had that birthday party. She bought a bottle of wine. She would typically drink like a quarter of it, and then it would stay in the refrigerator and go bad, and it would get tossed out in a couple, you know, weeks or whatever. Yep. She didn't even crack it. She's like, I don't need to do that. I don't want to. Like, it's just not as, it's not part of our like relationship anymore.
Right. We, you know, we have bottles of alcohol that are in our house that have been in our house for probably 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because my wife's the same way. She doesn't drink nearly as much. If she wants to really go out and tie one on for fun, because my wife's way different than us. My wife can tie one on and not drink for 6 months.
Yeah.
Right. I hate people like that.
Yeah.
like I told a friend of mine, he's like, yeah, I can have a beer and that's it. I'm like, I hate you.
Yeah. I don't understand those.
It doesn't
make sense.
Doesn't like, make
why
sense
would I
to
even,
me.
Why would I drink any kind of alcohol if my intention is always to get fucked up? And this is what I tell, you know, my psychologist or whoever prescribes the pills, I forget, but like, if you give me a pill that makes me feel good when I take it, I'm going to take 16 of them because it's going to make me feel 16 times as good. That's everything. I drink water like an alcoholic. I work like an alcoholic. Everything I do is very manic, very quick. Like when I did drink, I would drink an entire can of beer in 2 drinks. And then I would crack another. Like if I was taking a shower, I could easily drink 2 beers in the shower.
Yeah.
You know, shower beers.
You know, one thing as we progress on, we were talking about losing friends, and you were talking about the less friends you have, the less you want to be around people, right? One thing you'll notice as you get further into it, it's not that you want to be around less people, because if you find people that have your energy, you become an extrovert all over again.
Yeah. What I found too is since I've gotten sober, I've become a lot more intellectual. I find myself with more time to learn, if that's through documentaries, through reading. I mean, I spend 14 hours a day in my shop. You can only listen to so much music. I listen to a lot of, you know, politics, read a lot of books, a lot of history, a lot of, and what my problem now is I get very bored in conversations. If I feel like somebody isn't, and this sounds super arrogant, but it is what it is. Like, I can't find interest in talking to people that can't keep up intellectually. I get bored so easy, and I'm like, and then it turns like from boredom to irritability. Like, how could this person like how, why am I here? Why am I like, why am I spending my time talking to this person? And then it becomes, this is what I talk to my therapist about all the time. She's like, the problem is that when you mature, you expect everyone else around you to mature, but they haven't. So your frustration is, why aren't these people progressing at the same rate that I am? But that's not your job.
It's not your job. And, you know, the other side of that is, it may be arrogant, but have you ever tried with some of those people? Like, you're very intellectual, may have knowledge about one thing, right? Or many things, it doesn't matter. Instead of trying to push those conversations down the way your brain is going, have you ever tried to stop and go,
listen,
what excites you? What excites you mentally? That's a question I'll ask a lot of my friends. What excites you mentally? I've got a friend of mine that builds guitars for a living. So he'll talk about guitars. And what I find is I enjoy the passion of what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Right. Or, you know, Bliss is another one with his furniture making skills, and his knowledge of woodworking is amazing.
Yeah.
His style and my style, you know, most people are like, cutting boards, that's not rocket science. No, it's not. Right. But I found my niche. I'm 7 years in. I've got 3 employees, 2 apprentices. We're in several locations. We haven't even gone online.
Yeah.
Because I can't keep up.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So you find people, and when you seem to get irritable or whatever, try to find out what drives them and see, because a lot of people have a story of how they got to where they are. And I try to see where we correlate or where we differ. And if I can take some of that and go, oh, I'll try that here, see what happens.
Garrett, that is incredible, incredible advice. And I think that of anything that comes from this conversation, that's something that I'll definitely take away, because there are times that I'm very selfish in conversation and subconsciously, subconsciously thinking like, man, but I want to talk about this. And that person's like, I want to talk about guitars, and I'm as passionate about guitars as you are about leathercraft. And taking that into consideration, like how passionate I am about leathercraft or how passionate you are about woodworking, and this person is also that passionate, we both want to talk about our passions, like, so does this person. Like, take interest in what it is that they're doing and find the similarities.
Find the similarities. A lot of time I'll ask people, like, you know, what's your biggest struggle in what you do? Because I find that you get a lot of the same conversations about your struggles, because I was like you for a long time. I would talk and I would listen thinking, when can I talk again?
That is the biggest, the hardest thing, especially about doing podcast, is there's a strategy, and that's why I put myself into the position of having a podcast. Like I mentioned before, like, maybe there's only a handful of people that listen to this. I don't put a lot of production into it because I just want to have conversations with my friends. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I'm really doing this is to push myself in having better conversational skills. And that's the big one. When we're talking, whether it's you and I, whether it's me and my, you know, my wife, my dad, my whoever, the whole time I'm thinking, okay, at the beginning of what they just said, they made this one point, and I want to come back to that, but I don't want to cut them off. I'm trying my hardest to not cut them off, but I still want to talk about that one point. So the gap from what they first said to them finishing up their portion of, you know,
it could be gone.
I'm not listening to them.
One way I do that is like, listen, what we're talking about, I'm really interested, but I really want to add on to what you were saying to see if it correlates with you a little bit. But I make a mental note of what we were talking about before we go back, because after we get done, I go, okay, so what we were talking about was, and I'll zero out sometimes. I do. I'll blank. My wife gets mad. I go into my nothing box.
Yeah.
Right.
In itself is, it's a skill to learn. It isn't something that you can just be like, oh, this is what I want to do, so this is what I'm going to do. It takes work to learn that skill that you just described, because especially like somebody like me that has ADHD. Like, it's not that I'm inherently selfish and just want to be the only one that's providing to a conversation. It's that I get so excited about a single thing that someone says that then it's white noise after that. And I'm like, dude, I want to talk about that. And then I'm worried that the conversation is going to get go in a different direction where we're not going to be able to have a chance to talk about something I was so interested and want to talk about so badly.
One thing that'll probably rock your world is the next time you're talking to someone, realize they're as interested as talking as you are. Right? They want to share as much as you are. And that's one thing that, like I said, I don't know all the answers. I tell people a lot, I'm like the Titanic. I've made every mistake. Hopefully so you don't. But before we get too off, I want to touch on Maker Camp
Yeah, let's talk about it.
because this is your first year. Last year was my first year. The difference with this year is I'm actually staying on property. Last year I stayed off property at the Weldon House, which was basically like the show Dexter.
No, I don't watch much TV,
If
to
you
be
have ever seen
honest.
the show Dexter, if anybody listening has ever seen the show Dexter, it's like Dexter's Apartments, but for meth heads.
Oh, okay,
It was just
awesome.
a rundown, horrible built, One guy showed up one year. I think he didn't even have a roof. He just woke up and there was just stars.
Whoa.
Because he came in there hammered. I forget who told me that. But I stayed off property, so it was easy for me to vanish. Right? But it's also easy, especially you with the way you talk and the way you like to talk about, different subjects, you'll find everybody to talk to. And it's so interesting. And you'll see real quick who the partiers are. Right? And it's so easy to steer clear from that. But you also have to, like I said, I'm almost 8 years sober. Last year was my first year, so I was only seven. And I still had to remove myself sometimes. And I met some really cool people that way. And so don't be afraid, especially up there, because you're around a bunch of like-minded people.
It's like going to Disneyland.
It's like that. I think, who was it? I think it was Bliss that said it's like basically you're going for a sleepover with 500 of your best friends. And it's so cool. But one thing I did find is, or that's going to be neat this year is having you around. If you need to walk away, don't even hesitate to interrupt me what I'm doing. I'll go walk. We'll go, there's fires going on, there's games, there's people, there's always somebody doing something, which is really, really cool.
I think
So.
that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, as far as having tools. That's one of my tools, was the fact that I was incredibly honest with Austin, the head of this whole thing, when he had asked me to come on board to teach. I agreed to it, but as soon as I agreed to it, I explained to him, like, hey, I'm recovering addict, all of the different things the same way that I just told him, this is who I am. And then I reached out to the handful of people that I know that are going to be there. And I was like, hey, link me up with sober people. I need this. And that's how our friendship came. That in itself is a tool. If I would have went there and I would have been like, you know what, I'm going to keep it hush hush. This is an opportunity. This is a weekend getaway. I can get away. Like, that would be disastrous. Like, me now it goes from me being less concerned about staying sober over the weekend to, all right, I just need to get through the airports by myself and I'm golden. You know what I mean? Once I get there, I'm good. It's just that, like, I still am cautious about how to set up tools and checkpoints for all of my movements.
Yeah. Now, where are you at?
Southern California. So I'm coming from, I ha it's like a it's an 11-hour trip from here to there flying.
Well, okay.
Layovers,
Yeah. When are you getting in?
Thursday. I'm coming in a day early just because of
Yeah,
the flight
I'll
situation.
be there Thursday afternoon.
Okay. Yeah.
So
This actually will be coming out probably right when Makers Camp starts, because I bulk record and then I schedule them. So
yeah.
we'll probably be there when this comes out.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
When do you so you know, you were talking about being so busy with one thing, a workaholic and all that. You know, one thing I learned very quickly is I started finding hobbies and diving into them like hardcore. And then, you know, a friend of mine told me, he was like, "Hey, be very careful." I said, "What do you mean? I'm sober." He goes, "Yeah, but you're replacing one addiction with another."
Yeah, this is an ongoing battle that I have
I was
every single
like,
day.
"Wow, yeah." I mean, he was right, you know, because he had been sober for a long time. You know, you were talking about people reaching out to you.
Yeah.
Every year I post as my sober birthday, I have people reach out.
Yeah.
And at first, I'm gonna be honest with you, at first I did everything I could to help somebody out.
Yeah.
But then I started noticing a lot of these people were not really wanting to get sober. It just so happened that they really got drunk recently.
Yeah.
And that's it,
Well,
right?
I've been there
Because
before. I've been so drunk that I reached out to a sober friend
yeah.
hundreds of times. I get it.
So I started, you know, at first I started to be like, "Hey, where can I get you? What do you need? Blah, blah, blah." And you just get ghosted. And I started realizing, oh, okay, so there's certain types of people. One, I'll never help a woman. I will
Yeah.
get a woman to another woman, but I
Yeah.
never help females. That's rule number one. Rule number two, I'm going to ask you some real hard-ass questions, and you're
Yeah.
not going to like it.
Yeah.
My wife had a friend that kept going in and out of rehab, in and out of rehab, in and out. I mean, just over and over and over and over and over again. And I didn't know his Facebook had gotten hacked, but he reached out. Whoever reached out was like, "Hey, I need your help." And I didn't know his Facebook account had been hacked. And my wife laughs
Yeah.
at me for this. I responded and said, "No, you don't. You're not ready for my help.
Yeah.
You got hammered. You feel guilty." I said, "I'm not going to put up with your bullshit." Basically. And that's why I tell people now, I hit them real hard
Yeah.
because you've been through it. You know what's going through their brain. I want to see if you really want help. If you do, I got your back 100%. But I can spot it now.
It's almost like you read my cue cards, because that was the very last topic that I wanted to bring up to you, and we're coming close to the end. This is like it's kind of weird just because of how this whole conversation is played, but one of
Yeah.
those things is like the advice that you give to people that are dealing with addiction, but even more so, the advice that you give to friends and like give to friends and family that have an addict as a family member or a friend. And I'll just briefly give
Okay.
you a quick story about this. The last cruise that me and my wife went on, we always befriend people when we're on a cruise. Obviously, you're stuck on a boat with people, but it was this couple that was just the kindest couple. And I talked to anyone with two ears about my sobriety and how it's a part of my story and starting my business and everything. And they were really receptive of listening to it. You know, good for you, good for you. The next night, they came up to us while we were just kind of winding down outside, and they were like, "Hey, can we talk to you?" and spilled their guts about their daughter and them finding out that she's, you know, going through an addiction, and she just recently got caught stealing. And it was the most incredible thing and the highlight of our vacation, because I got to give the perspective of how they could help from their daughter's standpoint as the addict, and my wife got to give them the viewpoint of someone that is dealing with an addict, which would be them. And good news, their daughter got sober so far, and I stay in contact with them and try to give them like advice and being follow-up good parents to a child with, if that makes sense.
It does.
And I'm just curious to pick your brain on that topic, genuinely speaking. Like what has been, I mean, you kind of just shared your tactic with dealing with people that reach out about getting sober, but what about the people that are listening that have a friend or a family member
Yeah. Okay.
that is an addict and how they can steer them in a good direction.
So a little background on that. I was raised in the Baptist church, right? But my mom was the preacher secretary, basically ran the place. And I stopped going a long time ago. I believe in my own higher power.
Yeah.
You know, we don't really talk religion. That's about as far as I go. But she asked me, my mother asked me, if I would be willing to talk to a group of parents about addiction for their kids, whether their kids had it or not, but what to look for, how to handle it, things that maybe happened in my mom's relationship that could have been better.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, absolutely. But I want you to know I am not pulling any punches.
Yeah. You get me the way I come.
I said, as long as you're okay with that, I'll talk to them all day long. So I went in and it was a big horseshoe of tables. And I kind of got caught off guard because a lot of these people were not young parents. They were parents of friends of mine when I was in the church, but they heard that I was going to be talking and wanted to come hear my story.
Yeah.
And so I laid it out, you know, I told my story, my sobriety, and kind of, I told them what has happened to me, and I'll share it last thing with you before we go.
Yeah.
Kind of where I'm at now, because I want I want people to know you can do awesome things.
Yeah.
But I talked to these people and they're like, well, what do we do when they don't reach out? And I looked this woman dead in her face. I said, is your phone broken?
Yeah, they're never going to reach out.
And,
what do you mean?
And she goes, no. I said, then why are you complaining about them not reaching out? Are you too good to reach out to them if you know something's wrong? And my mom told me later that that floored that lady that anybody talked to her that way. But she took good things from it. So I tell people that, you know, have – because one thing my parents allowed me to do for a very long time is they ignored it, as a lot of family members do. Oh, my kid couldn't be that way. Oh, you know, my little angel. Your kid's not a little angel.
No.
That's why you're where you are. So you've got to handle it sooner than later, because if not, all you're doing is enabling it.
Yep. Everything you do except not addressing it is enabling it. I think that that's and again, just to contribute a little bit, is that that's what we were telling this couple when we were talking to them. Like, if they're living with you, you're enabling them. If the only thing that you should do if you feel guilty at all is feed them. Don't give them money for food, don't give them money for clothes, don't give them money, because the money that you give them for food, gas, any of those things, they aren't using it for that. Addicts are not concerned about eating. They're concerned about getting high. That's it.
Exactly. High or drunk, one or the other. My thing was never drugs. Like, my thing was booze. And, you know, I was talking to these people and helping them out. And I was surprised at how many people came up to me afterwards and said, thank you for your information. A lot of that stuff I had been unknown, you know, not knowing how to handle it. And you helped me think of ways of contacting my kids or my child or my friend. You know, I told them my Phoenix story, and we'll kind of slow down on this one, because I'm so. When my wife and I first met, I was working a very low-level job. We've only been married 7 years. And since I stopped drinking, I really started focusing on bettering myself. So I started learning things and moved up in my profession. I've got a full-time day job. Most people don't know what I do. I'm a scrum master and agile coach. And that's basically, I tell people I'm a project manager.
The word scrum is pretty cool, just to say.
It comes from rugby.
I don't even know what it means. It just sounds like a cool name. It's
basically a group of people moving in one direction for the same goal.
Okay.
But it comes from rugby, where the big group of guys gets together. That's a scrum.
Okay.
And so I moved up the ladder. We've moved around. With everything we've done, we you know, we got hit by a tornado. My shop got destroyed about 3 years ago. EF3 built the shop back up. My wife and I are doing amazing now. You know, she's my rock, but we just bought 8.15 acres of land.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's rad.
So that's our Phoenix, you know, kind of our step process. I've got, you know, we've got 3 dogs, 2 cats. Michaela's still with us. She's going legally blind. Her partner is actually one of my apprentices. I've now got a mother-in-law here too, that, you know, we take care of congestive heart failure. We bought land. The business is growing. My day job is growing. I'm now a contractor. I basically go where they need me. I get to kind of pick and choose where I work now. But I'm constantly growing. I constantly deal with my anxiety. I constantly deal with my depression. I guess to tell people, whoever's, you know, listening that may need, one, you will never be the same once you get sober.
Never, never, ever. You know,
you will never be the same.
It's the thing is that addiction as a disease, it's the only disease that you come back from better than when you first got it. No other, when you get cancer, it's not that you come back stronger after you beat cancer, but addiction, you're a better version of yourself than you ever were before.
You know, you'll never hear, it's funny, as you hear, you talk to people that are sober, you can tell the people that are committed, right? Because a lot of people will say, I used to be an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic.
Right.
I always will be an alcoholic. It's the difference between somebody saying, like a smoker, like I used to smoke, and I kind of quit everything at once. Like I was on Xanax for my depression. I quit that. That was actually worse of a
detox, especially if
than
you're
alcohol.
Drinking.
No, it's I mean, after I quit drinking,
okay,
I was still taking my Xanax prescribed. Yeah.
Right.
But I was like, everything I heard bad about it, I was like, no, I quit that. The detox for Xanax was nothing compared to drinking. It was so much worse.
Yeah, I went through both of them at
prescribed.
The same time. Yeah,
oh.
I was doing street Xanax, so a bunch of fentanyl and a bunch of just probably, you know, sidewalk chalk and everything else that they pressed.
Yeah, who knows what was in it.
And I was snorting them, and it got bad, dude. It got real bad.
But I'm proud of you, by the way.
Hey, I'm proud of you, too.
So you ask a smoker, this is a good analogy for alcoholics. You ask a smoker, somebody who's really kind of on the fence, if you ask them if they want a cigarette, they're like, no, I'm trying to quit. But somebody who's truly committed, truly done, they're like, no, I don't smoke.
Yeah.
And you'll start to notice those kind of answers, and it's very subliminal, but you'll notice it. Like, you know, I don't say, no, I don't drink. I'll still tell people, no, I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And it's funny to see the react. They're, oh, I'm real sorry. I didn't mean to, you didn't offend me. I just want you to know where I'm at.
Right. Thank you for your kindness. If it were before, I'd be happy. Like, it comes from a kind heart. That's the same way that when people offer drinks to me now, if I know I'm going to be in a position where drinking is really common, I just do cranberry juice. I only drink it if I'm at a casino or if I'm at a punk show, at a bar, or in a bar, and I can smell, bars smell like bars.
Bars smell like bars.
Yeah. If I can smell that smell, then I go just cranberry. That way, one, people don't offer me a drink. And two, it's the only time I drink it. I don't drink it at home. It makes me feel a little bit different and more, a little bit more secure. So it may not work for everyone, but it definitely is a tool that works for me.
Well, you know, a lot of your bartenders, if they know you're sober and you ask for cranberry, they know you're sober.
Oh, yeah.
That's the, they'll know from, like, I noticed that going when I was even drinking. I knew that. Like, if somebody asked for cranberry, they're sober.
Yeah.
And so I would make, mocktails basically for people like that, because true story, we went to a Michelin star restaurant in Chicago, and I asked for a mocktail because it's nice to have a drink and
Sure.
be part of the and I downed it. And my wife goes, "Well, that answers that question.
Yeah, you still got it. You're still
You
an
still,
alcoholic.
but I do. I'm much further along. How are you? How long are you in sobriety?"
I just hit 3 years.
Okay. It took me quite a while to try some of these non-alcoholic beverages.
Yeah, like non-alcoholic beer.
No, I don't do
Oh,
non-alcoholic beer.
I don't have any desire to drink beer unless there's alcohol in it.
There's some companies that make like non-alcoholic whiskey. And there's a company called Three Spirits that makes non-alcoholic, but they have natural ingredients that'll make you a little more social, right? And so you get to have drinks with your friends. So I'm actually going to bring a bottle of the Three Spirits, which I found out you were coming. So you
That's
can
so
have a
rad.
so you can have a drink, but you don't feel compelled to have a drink. So I'm gonna bring a couple bottles of that. Just, they're completely non-alcoholic. They're all natural. And what I've learned is I'll have some drinks of that like every now and then, but I don't want it all the time. Right. So that's there's bottles have been sitting around forever. They make non-alcoholic wine, which is basically just grape juice. But
It's a Martinelli's.
I love my favorite thing in the world is sparkling grape juice.
Oh God, it's the best. Are you
I
kidding me?
love it. It's absolutely great. But yeah,
It's
there
so
are
good.
things out there that are, natural. Weed was never my thing, right?
Made me paranoid. The only time I could smoke weed was if I was drinking because my inhibitions were already down. But dude, if I smoked even a tiny bit of weed, I think that the FBI is, and I live in California, mind you, where weed
It's
is
legal.
nothing. It's
Yeah.
nothing. That it's not even like grandma smoke it. But I would think that the FBI was going to, break through the window because I just get paranoid. It wasn't the drug for me. I was Xanax, alcohol, coke, whatever else, you know what I mean? I never really liked ecstasy. I never did meth, but like any kind of downer, any kind of pills, that kind of stuff,
Right.
I loved it. But yeah.
I went to a shop here that sells a bunch of Delta 8 and Delta 9 stuff, right? And I was talking to the lady because my, I'm interested about these things, these non-alcoholic, these legal things that you can do to enjoy. And it's still kind of funny to me that there's all of this stuff out there, but you've got to be careful with it as well, because
You're still
it
an
can.
addict.
You're still, yeah. And so what I've noticed is I've had a couple of the Delta 8s every now and then, but it did absolutely nothing, right? Like I didn't wake up the next day and go, "Ooh, that was amazing. I'm gonna do it again today." Like it just, and with the, and I don't know, I battle more now with the real emotions of things.
Yeah,
The
same.
that's the things I struggle with. I'm around drinking. We go out, people have them. My wife will have some every now and then when we go out. If she really wants to tie one on, she goes and hangs out with her friends for a night, and that's kind of our understanding. She has a friend named Tiny Tot that she'll travel with, and they'll tie one on, and that's kind of, and I go to Maker Camp. So I've, this year is the year of things that I love. I've been working on my tattoo sleeve.
Oh, beautiful. Very cool.
So there's a lot of fun stuff on here we'll talk about another day. Because this is not visual.
No,
But
exactly. I always tell people at the beginning because, I have a lot of leather crafters and they want to talk about the wallet that they just made. I'm like, no one can see it. But yeah, man, I totally agree with you. I think that going into Maker Camp, having, for me, it's a godsend just to have yourself and a handful of other people, even people that I know do drink, but I trust that I can go to, like Ethan, like Lucas.
Lucas.
Yeah, Lucas is the one. I don't know who put me on to you, whether it was Lucas or.
Lucas. It was
Okay,
Lucas.
yeah. But I've been. The thing is that it doesn't have to be a sober person. It's about being honest with somebody that you truly trust, because I know if they hear this, they got the golden ticket. If they see me drinking, sock me in the gut. I not that I would, and not that I need
Oh,
that
I'll
kind of
smack you in the
babysitting.
balls.
Yeah, exactly.
I will open hand smack you in the
It's
balls.
just that I know that I have that accountability, and it's just reassuring. It more than anything, it relieves some of the anxiety that I have going into new territory. I'm cool at my house, I'm cool at my friend's house, I'm good at bars, but like to be around a bonfire with a bunch of dudes that love the same shit, you get carried along in a conversation like, man, what's one beer? One beer is not one beer, it's a whole case of beer and a bottle of whiskey, and then I'm in Buffalo, New York, and all of a sudden I'm in a whole different location, sleeping on someone's couch that I've never met, because I black out. I don't get buzzed, I don't get drunk, I black out, and then I immediately start drinking again and go on a week bender and fuck up my whole life in 1 week. Like if I'm a person of extremes, if I'm gonna do anything, I'm gonna do it to the extreme. I do that with my business, I do that with my relationship, I do that with everything. It's not healthy. I'm not trying to say it's healthy, but being
That's just the
aware of
way it
it,
is.
yeah,
Yeah.
being aware
Yeah.
of it helps you a
One
lot.
of the coolest things that'll help you at Maker Camp is blacksmithing.
Okay, I want to try it all.
Those guys, no, I'm not just talking about trying it. Those guys run those forges all night long.
Oh, wow. Well, I guess they have to, right?
Because they love it and they get around a bunch of guys, that and they run those forges all night. You can just walk in and be like, "Hey, what's
Well,
up?
I'm
I want to."
early, especially with the time difference. Like, I go to bed here in California at 9, so it's gonna be like, what, 12 there? You're 3 hours ahead. Speaking of which, that reminds me, we got to wrap this up, because I don't, I'm a selfish dude, and I know you got wife time, and I respect that.
Yeah,
So
I
I
do. She
totally
just
respect
asked me if I'd take some stuff out to the compost pile.
that. There you go. Hey, it never ends. With that said, Garrett, I want to wrap it up, but I also want to ask if you have any advice for people that are struggling or that are new in recovery. Maybe just a little bit of advice. Like I said, I talk on here all the time, but it's always nice to have someone else's perspective. Then kind of plug where people can find you, and then we'll wrap it up, brother.
Absolutely. One of the biggest things that was told to me and that I keep with me is that it's going to be hard, right? Getting sober is hard, but you're not the first person to ever be an alcoholic. You're not the first person to ever be an addict. I tell that to anybody. There's somebody out there that's been there. So if you are scared to reach out to somebody, reach out to me. I tell that to I've done several podcasts and I say the same thing. Reach out to me. I will get you to where you need to be. If I can help you, I will. I'll do whatever I can if you're truly ready to have help. You can find me Instagram. Instagram is CW underscore woodworking. That's my main point of contact. My website's been built, but I haven't turned it on because I don't want to start it underwater. We're probably going to turn it on the first of the year after the holidays. We are, you can find me at Garrett at CWwoodworking.net. That's my email. And then one of the other places that we're starting to have a lot of fun is TikTok.
Yay, another TikToker. That's where
Yeah.
I
And
do a lot of
so,
work.
we've just started that not too long ago, and you can find us at CW underscore wood. And the reason I shortened it on there is because people would be like, CW woodworking, like that's what they'd call me. And the name got so long, it just got people would just start avoiding it. And so, yeah, we do that there. And
That's awesome,
so
man.
reach out to me there. I've got a guy from Atlanta. He's autistic and he wants to come up and hang out in the shop one day. My son
Awesome.
has Asperger's, so I'm kind of, I've learned a lot about autism, and we can talk another day about all that. But yeah, reach out anytime you got anything. But the biggest advice is it is okay to be a fuck up.
Something Nobody. That's also let's go ahead. There was that gap. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. Nobody's perfect. So
something that's helped me along the way too, which resonates with me. It might not resonate with everybody else, but the thought that you don't have to do this forever. You just have to do it today. Meaning don't look at 20 years down the road. It's good to set goals, but just get through today. And then mm-hmm. you get to wake up tomorrow and make the choice if being sober is still good for you. And if you do that for a week, then double it. Okay. Well, you know what? A week, it was hard, but I'm starting to see the world differently. I start smelling the world different. Like those first 6 months of sobriety are some of the scariest, the most anxious, but the most beautiful. It's like when you get a new pair of glasses and they adjust mm-hmm. your prescription and the lenses don't have scratches. When you go out and you're like, oh my God, you can see every leaf on that tree. That's how it is the first 6 months of sobriety. And man, I miss that. Then you really have to come back to reality and people care a little bit less. And you know, it's a new thing, but we could go on and on. Like I said, I could talk to you for hours and thank God I get to when we're at Maker Camp. But
yeah,
Garrett, I appreciate you coming on, man. It's awesome talking to you. Like I said, I'm a pretty selfish dude, but I want your wife to have some time with you. And but I appreciate you, man, sharing your story a little bit and giving some advice and just encouragement to people. I hope the people that are listening to this podcast are the right people that needed to listen to this podcast.
Right. All right, dude, I appreciate it. And I will see you in about a month.
Hell yeah. All right. And we'll have you on again, too. How about that?
Sure. Sounds good, brother. I'll talk to you later.